It's good to come to the Lord's place where it's warm. It's a warm house and the warmth of fellowship because my house has no power. So I lived since yesterday, 2:30 onwards. I've been staying in a house probably around 55 degrees. So you put on your jacket and you know what? No power, no internet, no TV. You find that you have a lot of time on your hands. And really, it's good because, like, your mind is less cluttered, and you find yourself being able to ponder on things, more relevant things, instead of just like sitting in front of the TV watching inconsequential things that is, you know, in front of your eyes, and on the internet serving, it's killing time, even though you think you're enjoying yourself. But it's good. It's good to be here. When I thought of this message, you know, I didn't expect that we're going to have a storm yesterday. And you know, when you come to think of it, when we have storms now, we had weather forecasts that tells you 2 days in advance, 3 days in advance if you go to weather.com, or you know, if you young people, you don't care much, but at least your parents will tell you a storm is coming. So we are mostly safe at our own home. We wouldn't be exposed to the elements. We wouldn't be stuck on a train. I heard that someone got stuck on Metro North for 12 hours because it said that this train, right, in front, the tree fell down. Behind, the tree fell down, so the train was stuck. So for 12 hours, you're sitting there, and I wouldn't want to be in that situation. But really, you know, seriously, most of us will be in the safety of our home. But when you look at Mark 4, this storm, it's a familiar miracle, very familiar. I'm sure you've read it many times, you heard it many, many times. I wonder, when we come across this passage, where is our focus? Is our focus on, wow, how would Jesus do that? It's such a tremendous miracle, it's magnificent. How did he do that? That's mostly my focus. Or would you think about the reaction, the actions, the words of the disciples? Why would they do that? Why would they say that? For me, I would just imagine if I were there, I would be standing. I'm not sure I would be standing. I'll be in that little boat, being tossed around, waves coming up, I'll be scared because, like, we're going to drown. 1 minute, I thought I was going to die. The next minute, we woke up, Lord Jesus, and he told the wind and the waves, be still. And the waves and the wind listened to him. That must be a tremendous experience to be there experiencing it firsthand. Not like if you go to watch an IMAX movie and your seat moved, or you went to these rides at Six Flags, okay, or Universal Studio that made you believe that you're in a certain situation. No. To experience first time, if you were there yourself, you'd be awestruck. What would be your reaction? What would be your reaction? My faith tells me it's true, it's real. But in the back of my mind, my question is, how did Jesus do it? How could this be done, even knowing that he's God? That he would make the wind and the waves quiet down, subside. I would like to try to use some scientific equations, formulas to calculate, right? Throw in the computer, iterations, and find out the number, how great a force would be required to reverse, or what atmospheric phenomena would cause the squall to die down. Now, this past week, I just turned on the TV and I saw footages of the tsunami in Japan. That was this year, right? It was March. And they were just showing, citizens taking home videos, And they were giving segments of different cities and what people saw. And all you keep hearing in the background, the people who were holding the camera saying, it's over, it's over. The tremendous force of the tsunami wiping away everything in its path, buildings, cars, nuclear plants, anything. How would Jesus be able to stop the wind and the waves? What kind of force does Jesus have? I think it's a rational question. I think it's a proper question to ask. I'm wrong. Because subconsciously, I'm trying to rationalize that this is possible, that this has happened, this has happened. When you rationalize, in my mind, maybe when I ask, how is it possible? Maybe the answer would be, wow, you need such a great force. Nah, it's not possible. It's not possible. Am I just like the disciples? My reactions were just the result. Instead of accepting that Jesus calmed the wind and the waves, that he's God, they said, who is this? Who is this? Who is this person that even the wind and the waves obey him? So granted, if I'm able to find the answer, this amount of force, Newton's second law, Newton's third law, Newton's fourth law, Newton's fifth law, throw them all together and found out the number, a huge, I don't know, 10 to the power 30, whatever force required. I said, wow, God is great. Or maybe, I end up saying, nah, it's not possible. It's not possible. When I think about what I'm trying to do, I realize, I am just like the disciples. And what did Jesus say to the disciples after he calmed this wave and the sea? He said, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? After you've seen all the miracles, how I healed the sick, how I helped the poor, how I forgiven sin, you still have no faith? After you have believed in Christ, believed in me for 20 years, for 25 years, for 30 years, do you still have no faith? I'm talking about myself. Jesus' grace, he calmed the waves. He calmed the wind. Before he talked to the disciples. No, parents, our parents, what they do when you ask them to do something, they say, wow, you're wrong, you shouldn't have done this. Before they do it for you. Whereas Jesus did it the reverse. He solved the problem first. Not like our parents. They yell out first and then they help us. With Jesus, he helped them, calmed them down, and then he yelled at them. Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. That's in Hebrew. When we have faith, our faith, we don't have to see it. We know it's true. We're sure of what we hope for without having it come true. That's what faith is. Faith doesn't need any scientific proof. So when we try to look for proofs, then we are men of little faith. Man of little faith, I thought about myself. 3 years ago, we took a family vacation to Bermuda. I don't know who amongst us have been to Bermuda. Very nice place. Very, very nice place. I had a great time there with You know, because John was just going to college, and Steph had worked for a year at that time. So we wanted to do something exciting, so we went to Bermuda. I didn't realize it was an experience of a lifetime that I would never forget. The second day, Auntie Lucy and Steph and John, they said they want to go kayaking. You know, I'm not much of an athlete. You look at me, I'm not an athlete at all, so I'm not thrilled to go. But I don't want to be like spoil the fun, right? So I said, all right, I'll go. And I don't know, when you see the little small kayak, you're like wobbly, right? I need two people to help me to get in. I was much younger then. I was 3 years younger then. But anyways, we got in, and there were raindrops, just a few. The person who rented the kayak said, nah, no problem, it's just little raindrops. So Steph and John, they had their own kayak. Auntie Lucy and myself, we had another kayak. And so in Bermuda, the northern part is an airport, and then there's a causeway, and then the southern, you know, island. So the kayaking place is right at the causeway. So they said, well, you went by the causeway on the other side, then you explore some of the caves and things. Nice and calm, beautiful day, except for a few annoying raindrops. I remember telling Aunt Lucy, I said, you know, these raindrops are following us. Wherever, you know, we move to, and you know, the little raindrops. But then sooner, the raindrops started, gone. They went away. I saw that they went over to the airport side, the northern side. So Steph and John, they were like going away. They were paddling much faster than we were. And we told them, well, be careful. You know, don't do anything crazy. And there they're gone. And they were further and further away. And I turned my head and I said, oh, the rain, the heavy rain now, over by the airport. So we paddled for about half an hour, and I said, Lucy, let's get back. So we yelled. I said, Steph, John, we're heading back. When I turned around, I knew I was in trouble because heavy rain was coming at us, pouring rain coming at us. Not paying attention to dangers around us is a typical trait for most of us. I wasn't paying attention. Just a few raindrops. We're enjoying ourselves. And all of a sudden, I turned around. I saw the rain coming. Sheets of rain, you can't even see. Few drops of rain, not paying attention. Also, there's a sense, I can deal with it, I can handle it. Just like the disciples, right? By the time they went to see Jesus, they went to wake Jesus, they said, Teacher, don't you care if we drown? Drown. Now, chances are, these are very, very experienced fishermen. That's the profession. They knew how to handle storms. I'm sure they have experienced storms in their lifetime when they were out in the open water. But they might have seen it coming. They knew what they should do. They'll run for cover, right? Back to the coast. But this time, whatever they were doing, they waited the last minute. And then they call for Jesus. They were in danger of drowning. Teacher, don't you care if we drown? They were relying on, they're not paying attention, or maybe they're relying on their own capability. They were fishermen. When they see the clouds coming, when they see the weather changing, they said to themselves, we could handle it. A lot of times in our life, we said we could handle it also. A man of little faith tend to rely on his own capability. A man of little faith in God tend to rely on his own capability. Unfortunately, our confidence in ourselves far exceeds our capability. We overestimated our own capability. But on the other hand, our trust in God is proportionate to our faith in Him. Our trust in God is proportionate to our faith in Him. But our confidence in ourselves far exceeds our own capability. So the disciples, they may have tried to resolve, tried to save themselves, but then they found out there are options. So as a last resort, they had to go wake up Jesus. And they said, "Teacher, don't you care? Don't you care if we drown?" A lot of times, men of little faith, we don't know we can count on God. We don't know we can ask Jesus for help. But He's gracious. He's gracious. A lot of times, He helps us without us asking, without us knowing when to ask. Auntie Lucy and me, we finally moved into our home. We have been nomads for 11 months. We sold our home of 24 years back in Thanksgiving last year. Right at Thanksgiving, we closed last year. So we've been looking for a place. We found a place within 2 months. We thought we've seen two other brothers and sisters rebuild their home. We thought the process was okay. So if they could do it, I could do it. So we decided to buy an older home, tore most of it down, and rebuilt. Took 11 months. 11 months. Throughout, I could tell you 10, 15 stories about God's protection, God helping us. I can tell you this one that happened last week. If you know Uncle Felix, you know that I try to be on the ball. I try to be proactive. So before something happens, I try to get ahead of it, right? So when you build a home in America, just like when you rebuild the church here, you had a lot of inspections. You have plumbing, you have electric, you have mechanical, you have... anyways, a lot. I can't, okay? And we thought we're at the last inspection, the building inspection. If we get approval, then we'll be able to move back in. That Friday, that's about 10 days ago, Friday, we had the inspection. We got all excited because Aunt Lancy Lucy was in San Francisco. So I was there here in Summit waiting, and the builder called. He says, I hate to tell you, but the town canceled on you. The town did not have enough inspectors that day. So we're all disappointed because I thought we could move in. I could move the cat over and we could move in. But that means I had to wait another weekend. So the builder says, "Why don't you find out if you can go to the town and you can beg and see if they'll come, or you make another appointment for Monday." So we went to town, and the lady, some town people are very nice. They're hard to deal with, but they're nice. She smiled. She said, "Okay, let me look at your file." She said, "Had you had plumbing?" I said, "Yes." "Had you had electric?" "Yes." "Had you had mechanical?" "Yes." "Had you had fire?" "Yes." He said, "What about engineering?" I didn't know we need engineering, inspection, because the sheet they gave you in the beginning didn't list engineering inspection. So I turned pale. Okay? And so she called I said, "Oh, who knows when the person can come, it's another week waiting." So she called, the person very nice, the engineer said, "He'll come that afternoon." Okay. I went back. Now, that week, for months and months and months, it took 6 months altogether, right? The front of the house was mounds of mud, dirt, nothing. We had always, anytime you find someone you have to wait for them to come in and do the work. We had been waiting to build a retaining wall required by the town for maybe a month and a half. Finally, the person came, and they did a very nice job. Retaining wall, steps going up, a platform, a few more steps leading to the house. If I knew I needed an engineering inspection, I would have called 2 weeks ahead, 3 weeks ahead, tell them to come. I would have failed. I would have failed because it's mounds of dirt, mounds of mud. Why would he pass you, right? The engineer came in the afternoon around 3 o'clock. Just when the workers were sweeping up, they just finished. They just finished. The engineer took a look. 30 seconds, he says, "You're good to go. I'll give you a seal." If I had done it, rely on my own thinking and approach, I would have added more frustration, more grief, more stress to myself. But God knew me, and God knew that I'm a man of little faith, that I count on my own capability too often. And he stopped me from going to town too soon. And the engineer, really, when the workers were sweeping nice and clean, he came. He said, "You're good to go." Man of little faith, it's all your fault. It's all God's fault. The disciples, they went to Jesus. "Don't you care if we drown? Don't you care? Don't you love us?" I think we've all said that little phrase, right? "Don't you care?" When we ask our parents for something and we didn't get it. "Don't you care about my problem? Don't you care that I really needed this?" We've said it. We've all said it. God cares. Your parents care. God loves us. Your parents love you. But you know what? That's the culture we're in now. We are taught to not have any responsibilities of our own. We are taught, if I want to use a stronger word, we're brainwashed to blame other people. When we have little faith, we blame God for something that's bad that happened to us. That's the culture we live in. If you listen to the radio, the commercials, right, there's a lot of credit problems. They're commercials. The first thing they say, "Times are tough. It's not your fault. We can help you with your credit problem." It's not your problem. It's not your responsibility. "Times are tough. It's not your fault." I heard this week also, when you go to college, right, the government wants to give you a lot of student loans. And they want to expand that program, give you more loans. So by the time you come out, then you owe the government a lot of money, right? But I didn't realize, even though you owe a lot of money, if you couldn't pay it back in 20 years, it's forgiven. If you owe the government money, student loans, college loans, we can all go to college. If we can't pay it back within 20 years, after 20 years, it's forgiven. Whatever balance it is, it's forgiven. I didn't quite understand that. You know, after 20 years, that's when you started to be in your 40s. That's when you're productive. That's where you have earning power. You know, that's not your responsibility. That's the government's responsibility. It's okay. You know, that's the culture we live in. We need to be careful. Now, talking about my own experience again, I was very upset. You don't know how upset I was. In August, I was given a ticket by the Madison policeman. I had to rent. I was renting in Madison. It's a very nice town, pretty town. I was upset because I knew there were speed traps. I kept warning John, I kept warning Lucy whenever they drive, because that road we have to take to go back to Summit to see the house. So I always warn him, "Don't go too fast, don't go too fast," right? And here it is, that day, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, nice, beautiful, warm, breezy day. I was going, I saw flashing lights behind me. Okay, I picked up my registration, my license. The first thing I said to the policeman, "Sir, I have not gotten a speeding ticket for 30 years. To me, I want to tell him I'm a good driver. I haven't received a speeding ticket for 30 years. So, hey, don't give me a ticket, because I am a good driver. I hadn't received..." You know what he said? I was really upset. He said, "You're getting one today." It's a young cop, so... So mad. Uncle Felix was very mad, okay? I was saying, why, you know, have some compassion, right? And here's an old guy, you know, driving a car, a dopey car, a Subaru. Why? I'm not like a speed monster, you know? I'm not like a teenager, 20-year-old, on a Friday night driving like crazy. I'm just like, there's no traffic. The speed limit was 25. You know how hard it is to drive 25 miles an hour? I mean, you can't, if you don't step on your accelerator, you're going 30 miles an hour. He gave me a ticket. You know what's worse? When I look at the ticket, he said when I was passing him, I was going 40. He said when he started following me, I sped up to 45. So he wrote 45. I'm like, you know, this guy is like out to get me. So I stewed for like a month and a half. And, you know, I paid the fine and all that, right? It dawned on me. I was in the same situation as the disciples. Blaming other people. I blamed the policeman for giving me the ticket. It's his fault for giving me a ticket. I was the one driving too fast, right? When we do something wrong, how often do we say, "It is my fault. I deserve what I get"? No, the tendency is blame somebody else. But that's the culture. That's what we are subliminally taught to do. Be careful. Be careful. For anything that happened to us, that we lay the blame on God. God doesn't love us. God doesn't care all the difficulties I have. You know, our world is a very small world. We have our friends, we have our family, we have school friends, we have colleagues. So just give us our iPhone, our iPod, our iPad, we're fine. It's true, right? Very small world. Don't bother me. I'm fine. We're good to go day in, day out. We go to school. We go to work. We come home. We have a family. We may have trouble with our brothers and sisters sometimes, our spouse sometimes, our parents sometimes, our children sometimes. Very small world. But unfortunately, we're a little boat in a big global world. We may not realize, but at this present time, I dare say, the world is very turbulent. Very turbulent. Anywhere you look, in the Middle East, you have the Arab world in upheaval, Libya, Tunisia, Egypt, Syria, Yemen. You can keep on going. In Europe, you have the Euro crisis in Greece. Here in America, the economic woes, the Great Recession, political discord. The world is stormy right now. And that's the world we live in. Unless we pay attention, we are not aware. So, who should we count on? Who should we count on? On our own capability? Blaming other people for whatever, blaming God for whatever bad things that happen to us? Or do we know that God loves us, He cares for us? Psalm 121. He watches over Israel, will neither slumber or sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at night, and the sun will not harm you by the day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. So for the little boat that we're in the big ocean, in the ocean of the world, where is our eye cast upon? Where is God's eyes? God's eye is on us, and our eyes should be on God Himself. So that day in Bermuda, I want to go back to Bermuda. Heavy rain, sheets of rain were coming towards us. And Auntie Lucy says, let's paddle, let's go back. We couldn't see John and Steph by then. We just had to struggle. The rain was pelting on my face. I couldn't see. It was stinging. I was wearing glasses, but it was stinging. The rain was really stinging. And we had to go through the arches of the causeway. And the water was the currents were very fast, strong. And we paddled. It seems like for ages we couldn't go through the arches. Because once we cross the arches, it's into the protection, right? It's where the doctors and we would be safe. We struggled, and we didn't want the kayak to hit the side of the arch, because then we'll flip over and you wouldn't be seeing me today. I was worried about John, I was worried about Steph. But at that time, our mind was... I thought about Jesus, I thought about this particular, miracle, but I was too busy then to really focus and pray. But, it's a miracle. After seeming the longest time that we couldn't, we get close, and then the water would push us back. We get close, the water pushes back. All of a sudden, I didn't know how we did it. We came through. We passed the arches into calmer water. And there was some person on a motorboat. He saw us. So he threw a rope for us so that we can tie to our boat, our kayak, and he pulled us back to the dock. And he left before we were able to find out who he was or to thank him. He was gone. Steph and John, they made it back. They were stronger than us. So they made it back about 10 minutes later. They weren't afraid. Maybe they were young people than us. But when we're in a storm, when things are turbulent around us, are we alone? Are we by ourselves? Or is Jesus in the boat with us? That we know we can count on Him. This world refused to know God and rejected God and does not need God. What about us? What about us in this boat of life, in this little boat of ours? We're being buffeted by the waves, by the wind. Who do we ask to help us? Who do we ask to save us? Who do we focus on? Jesus Himself. Because God's eyes is on us. He cares about us. He loves us. We're not facing life all by ourselves. Have faith. Because faith would prevent us from being fearful of this world. So as we have faith in God, we can count on Him to help us, and He has promised us He would, that He loves us, and He cares for us.